This week on It's So Bad, we're playing war games and adding the original Call of Duty to the endless list here on the podcast. Gang, we have a whole gang here this evening, a complete pod. We have Chris.
Hello, Mike.
We have Matt.
Hi.
And we have Steve.
Hello.
Joining us for a podcast. You missed out on the last couple.
Yeah, I feel like I was here in spirit.
You were here in spirit, yeah. As well. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, etc. You can also check out the complete endless list on our Medium page, and also within the podcast description, we are adding to this game to the endless list. Call of Duty, the 2003 Infinity Ward developed game published by Activision, led into a plethora of Call of Duty games. A lot.
People like Call of Duty.
There are a lot of Call of Duty games now.
It's a thing. It's a thing for sure.
So yeah, what is the endless list that we're adding this to? Does anybody want to take a gander at describing what the endless list is? Anybody?
The endless list is our list that has no end. But
it's currently 56 games.
Right now it has an end, but in theory it will be
endless. It's like a list segment.
Yeah, that's right. It's an ever-growing list that we're adding games to. And
they don't have to be good games.
No, it's every game.
Yeah, every game.
And we scientifically rank them through our vetted, proven process.
Yes, and we specifically make sure that these games are not relevant for any time. So Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the second...
Modern 2?
So Call of Duty Modern Warfare that just came out, which is the second Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Has anyone here actually played it?
I haven't. It's
the
soft reboot of the original.
But just I'm describing how we aren't relevant here because
we're not relevant.
They came out like a month ago, and no one's talking about them anymore.
I think people are on a Star Wars now.
On a Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, by the time this podcast comes out, people will be on to I don't even fucking know because it's going to come out in like 3 weeks.
They're going to talk about the new Onimusha game that gets randomly announced the week that the last episode comes out.
We are right here in the middle of game release season two, or at the start of it. From like,
well, I think
the
we're
clocks
at the,
change. It's dark outside. Nobody goes outside for four months or so.
Yeah, I think we're getting towards the end of like the big bang ones because Jedi Fallen Order will be.
That was a big season.
I think people companies, they are different. They intentionally release.
Are they?
They release games. You know, they don't want to release them too late because then you miss Game of the Year. You know.
Yes.
Like if they have a good game that they're confident.
Yeah, you want
in,
two solid
they,
months
they
of sales.
They want the press to play it
they,
for a month.
They used to.
Before
so they used
Christmas.
To release it right around Thanksgiving so that they could get the Black Friday and the Christmas stuff.
Oh right, yeah.
But now
it's like two holiday. Like you know. Thanksgiving, you have time off.
Yeah.
Christmas, you have time off.
I remember Ocarina came out the Tuesday of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, right.
That game came out.
Listen, I'm just saying there's a reason the fiscal year ends in, like, what, March? They give you all winter to play games and rack up sales.
Yeah, well, now a lot of games are coming out in March and February.
Yeah.
I think that's probably pushing it because of development, but also, like, we still have, I think, one big release left, which is Pokemon, which comes out.
Today.
Did it come out today?
Came out today.
Is it today?
Yeah.
When we're recording this, it came out on this Friday. So
yes, it came out weeks ago.
Yes, but also currently.
I can't think of any other big ones that are this year that are coming out.
I mean, we can just talk about we should be talking about how just the landscape has changed. With Stadia is probably out by the time episode drops.
Yeah, all the other consoles are dead now.
I play all these games on my Stadia.
I just threw my PlayStation away.
No.
Yeah. I don't own a PC anymore.
Data caps aren't a thing.
Yeah. Switch is gone.
I play it on my Google Glass. I stream the Stadia through my Google Glass.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That came back, too.
Can you do that?
He does that.
I don't know. We'll have to find someone with
he
Google
does that
Glass.
Right now?
Yes, I do that right now.
So what is Call of Duty, the 2003 game?
Call of Duty, the 2003 game, is a World War II first-person shooter. That followed on the heels of another very popular World War II first-person shooter called Medal of Honor Allied Assault.
Right. I was going to say, it's not Medal of Honor.
It's not. This is the other one.
It's the other one.
Yeah. But now the more successful franchise, like, by a long shot.
Yeah, I mean, Medal of Honor is like
deactivated.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's owned by Electronic Arts. I think that's why it's not a thing.
Oh, yeah. They faded it.
Yeah. So, yes, developed, I mentioned, by Infinity Ward. So, speaking of Medal of Honor and Allied Assault, there is two gentlemen who worked on this game. There's a lot of gentlemen that worked on this game, but there's...
And some ladies, probably.
Yes, there are three heads. The director was Ken Turner, the producer was Vince Zampella, and the programmer was Jason West.
Zampanella or whatever?
Zampello.
Zampello? He's relevant now.
They all are relevant now.
Are they all? He's the only one I know.
So Infinity Ward was a small studio with 21 employees. They spun off of two guys, West and Zampella, were designers who worked on Medal of Honor Allied Assault. Then they created their own studio to make Call of Duty. They leveraged ID Tech 3, which is the third iteration of the Doom engine, which they used for Quake 3 to make this game. And what they did to kind of spice it up is, or make enhancements on it, was the AI was changed to make it make them more.
Yeah, I mean, Quake 3 was, there was no campaign to Quake 3, so the AI was just, you know, deathmatch AI.
Right. So they made enemies that could bank grenades and do flanking maneuvers and move from cover to cover. When you see AI in this game move around, it's not scripting typically.
It's interesting that you raised that they didn't have a campaign in Quake, because I was playing this on hard and there were sometimes
Quake 3.
I was playing this on hard and there was times where I could just run and gun my way through at lightning speed, and there are other times where I had to slow way down and take cover, and I was like, this is kind of like playing like actual multiplayer against real people. Like, not that they're so smart or so good, but that the damage is so turned up on high that if I took a couple of hits, I was done.
Yeah.
And I was like, good for them. This is challenging.
So to put this into perspective, I don't know if I want to go all the way back, but in 1998, I would say actually probably a better jumping off point, 96, Quake comes out, 97, Quake 2 comes out, and GoldenEye comes out. 98 had Spec Ops Rangers Lead the Way, which was the first Spec Ops game.
Is that related to Spec Ops The Line?
Yes.
It's the same.
We should talk about that game.
Rainbow Six comes out in 1998. Unreal comes out in 1998. Park Trespasser.
Oh, yes, right. Half-Life also comes out.
Half-Life comes out in 1998. Mm. 1999, you had System Shock 2, Medal of Honor, which I played.
The PS1.
I have Medal the original. Honor, it's not good.
I've never played the original Medal of Honor.
They have two. There's only. I'm pretty sure you can only have two enemies on screen at one time because the system can't handle.
There will be a time we'll play that game, but that game was pretty revolutionary at the time.
Maybe for you, but well, that game is way worse. Way worse than GoldenEye, and that game come out after GoldenEye.
The big thing for, I mean, not to get too off topic, but Medal of Honor, the big thing that they were touting when it came out was the AI was at another level. They were throwing grenades back.
Oh, yeah.
They were recognizing grenades.
But that game is like...
Yeah, I'm not saying...
It's like a corridor shooter. It's not open.
Right.
You have to... You go in a tunnel.
But it was very impressive at the time. Oh, okay. On a PlayStation, especially.
Okay.
That was impressive.
So
it was a big deal.
In 99, you also had Unreal Tournament, Quake 3 Arena, which were much better games than Medal of Honor.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean, they were PC games.
Yeah, and then in 2000, you had just Leading the Way. You had Perfect Dark came out. Counter-Strike came out in 2000. Medal of Honor Underground, yeah. Spec Ops 2, Time Splitters. You had Halo in 2001.
Mm.
2002, mm-hmm. You had Medal of Honor Allied Assault, Medal of Honor Frontline, Battlefield 1942. And then 2003, you had Call of Duty. So that kind of paved the way for, those are kind of the most relevant first-person shooters that kind of compare to this game. So what's the structure just of the campaign here?
Well, before we get to that, the paving the way too, I feel like this was a big World War II era in popular culture, because you had Saving Private Ryan come out.
I mean, this game cribs from Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. Yep. Well, there are sections of this game that are Saving Private Ryan.
No, this game cribs from Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers, much more so.
Yeah.
And then also, like, Enemy at the Gates.
Allied Assault.
I was going to say Enemy Gates, like the Russian portion.
Yep.
Allied Assault is more...
that's definitely Saving more Saving Band of Brothers.
Well, it was the Omaha Beach game.
Right.
Right.
And then this game was you dropping in as the 101st Airborne.
Yeah, paratrooper game.
That's Band of Brothers. So you start off in the campaign as an airborne group coming into Yes, U.S.
U.S. Army, or, yeah.
Coming into northern France during the D-Day invasion, to the prelude to the D-Day invasion, and you're capturing bridgeheads and securing different
things. Going through hedgerows.
Taking out artillery, clear the beaches for the boys.
Right. And then the second portion is the English portion, where you're playing as basically a superhero. You go from an everyman to being a special ops character, where you're doing things like blowing up dams or taking out emplacements around
Pegasus
dams.
Pegasus Bridge was like the big historical kind of reference for the British campaign.
Is that a real thing, by the way? It's got to be. Yeah. I've never heard of it.
There was a book that I always checked out of the library when I was like 6 or 7 that was like an illustrated version of this Pegasus landing. Yeah. When I played this game, I was like, oh, they're in the gliders. This is crazy. I know about this.
Yeah, that was like the relevant big kind of accomplishment of...
Yeah, the gliders were pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Just they ran out of sanity. They ran out of planes, and they wanted to ship a whole bunch of people across the channel. So what
silently.
So what they did was they built gliders out of like metal, and they transported them across. And a lot of people died because they crashed on the ground way too hard.
They were built to crash. Like they didn't land.
Right.
Yeah. I'd rather jump out of the airplane, to be perfectly honest.
Right. Yeah. Wild. And then the third portion of it, you're a scrub. You are cannon fodder for the Russians in the Russian campaign. You literally start with no weapon, and you have to find a weapon on a dead body and go from there in Stalingrad.
A fistful of bullets, 5 bullets to your name.
Start in Stalingrad, and you end in Berlin in that campaign.
Right. Yeah.
So a couple things, too, is there's famous people in this game. There's Jason Statham is a voice in the British campaign.
Oh, that is him?
Yeah.
That sounded so much like him.
And I didn't...
thought it was just being...
I didn't hear him in this, but Giovanna Ribisi's in this as well.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't hear him either, but I knew Jason Statham.
Who is that person?
Giovanna Ribisi is in Saving Private Ryan. He's the medic in Saving Private Ryan. Oh. He's also in Friends. He's also in Boiler Room.
I've seen a lot of movies. 2 episodes of Friends.
So. His sister is the redhead in...
medic from Saving Private Ryan is the best.
What's the movie? The high school movie where they do drugs and they go to a party.
Oh, from kids?
From the 70s.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
No. That's 90s movie, set in the late 70s.
Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused. Yeah. Yes. The redhead is Giovanni Ribisi's sister in that movie.
Okay. He's in Gone in 60 Seconds, right? I feel like he's
no.
in
that. Oh,
it's a good movie.
I think he is, because there's a ton of people in that movie.
I think he is. I think you are correct.
I think he's the brother, the younger brother, right?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Fun piece of trivia for you. So I didn't play the PC Call of Duty. I played Call of Duty Finest Hour, which is like the PS2 kind of like expansion to, or whatever, side story to
that. Yeah, they like move around where these sections are.
It's a lot of the same levels, but different order.
Right.
Yeah.
But so when it comes to famous people being voice actors, Brian Johnson, the singer of AC/DC. Is one of the voice actors in the British campaign.
Weird.
That's crazy.
There you go.
An Australian in the British campaign.
That contributed something.
There you go.
I'm here to help.
I think that game starts to... Yeah, so that's a weird... Call of Duty Finest Hour for the PS2 is kind of like a remix of that game. I got to check it out, but it's like... It starts in the Stalingrad.
It starts with Stalingrad. And they're the same level.
Yeah.
Graphically, they're a little different, but yeah, it starts with Stalingrad, which is... Such an awesome level overall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think what this game does differently for the time, a little bit, it leans into like the environmental in-game storytelling.
Yeah, definitely. You kind of get to know the like guys around you a little bit.
It's not like as much as like a Half-Life or like a System Shock, but it's like...
Well, a few other games up to this point had allied AI... squad mates.
Oh yeah, that was the big thing.
That was the big draw for this. Like compared to Medal of Honor Allied Assault, what I didn't like about that game is it always felt like you were kind of the super soldier character. Yep. It's like, all right, it's me and there's 2 guys over there, they're dead immediately, and it's just me from here on out. And I was like, this isn't how World War II was though. Like it'd be cool to like have a bunch of guys with you and be in a battle, and that's what Call of Duty does.
And these guys all had health that, you know, they could be damaged or not, and you know, they were relevantly or somewhat good at taking out enemies.
I was very serious about keeping my guys alive when I played this as a kid. I was like, I gotta keep these guys. Like, I would restart sometimes and be like, gotta keep the squad together.
I actually think this game would be more compelling if there was permadeath in between the missions. So if a guy died in the first mission, then you didn't carry over.
Or is that not the case?
I don't think so.
I think that there are some characters that definitely always survive, like your commanding officer. But there are other guys who are just randos who just, it's like, oh, it's Lieutenant Johnson.
It would have been cool if they leaned on that more.
But I think, you're like you said, the innovation in this game was just the fact that there was AI helping you.
I also...
And like actually helping you, not like...
I didn't play... well, I played Allied Assault when it came out, but I didn't play it before or recently. Did that have aiming down sights?
I don't believe so. I think that was an innovation for this game too.
I recall playing this game when it came out and being very like the whole concept of aiming down sights.
Yeah, the was iron sights,
very new to me.
Yeah,
and seemed like a big deal. And you know, Rainbow Six and games like that had like the leaning built into it. But this, I remember this being the first kind of more spectacle shooter, having a leaning
I would say
tactic
too,
built into it.
In terms of squad mates helping you, Rainbow Six was big in that regard. They were not AI assisted. They were like scripted on a path that you set before you went into the level.
They
right?
would so you could set them to like fire at will. You could expect them to return fire. They would do that without the scripting. The scripting was more of setting waypoints.
Right. So it was...
These guys, in Call of Duty, they're more autonomous.
Right. They're entirely autonomous.
And, yeah, I guess they are. Yeah, right. Well, and there's, like, chatter. There's,
And they'll kind of follow you, too. Like, there's one section in the Battle of the Bulge where I was like, I'm going to go left, and I would just run into all this machine gun fire. And I was like, all right, now I'm going to go right. And I noticed the squad was going with me as I did that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, 26 levels over three different country campaigns. There are various different levels. As we mentioned, there's like the more squad-based levels that are probably more historically accurate. Then there's like the commando-style levels where you have an objective that you need to blow up and go behind enemy lines. Then there's like the on-rails levels where you're in a car and you're shooting something. Yeah. So it's a little bit of some diversity in the gameplay. I found the U.S. campaign to be pretty fucking easy for this, as it's kind of like the intro, get started on it. And then as it as you go and continue, I think it gets progressively harder, with the Russian campaign being pretty hard.
Yeah.
Not overwhelmingly difficult, but harder.
So, Steve, I know you played... what is Veteran the hardest difficulty?
I think that is. I played it on hard, not on veteran.
I played on... I started the game on the hardest difficulty and got maybe two or three levels into the U.S. campaign, and it became too reliant on quick saving and quick loading, because you'd walk into a room and a guy would immediately dome you and kill you in one shot. And there's no health. There's no health pickups.
Oof, that's tough. And
so it's like you need to maintain your health throughout a level.
Yeah, you have to play perfectly.
So I ended up playing on hardened or whatever that...
Yeah.
Next difficulty level is, but I didn't find... I found somewhere in the British campaign to be the turning point where I think it was like the dam level, which is maybe a couple levels into the British campaign, where the enemies got to a point where I was needing to at least quick save somewhat or be much
more... That's a long level too.
Yeah,
it's extremely long.
Yeah,
I feel like any of those levels where you're like in confined spaces
and alone
were much harder, because a guy could just come around the corner, you'd have no idea. Could be 10 guys coming around the corner, you'd have no idea.
And they really just shoot you twice and you're dead.
Yeah, you're dead. Exactly.
I felt so there's some games that have like these great set pieces that are very interesting. So the first one that I thought that I had real tension, that I was like, man, I'm in a battle and I'm like really trying to hold on, was the bridge.
Yeah.
And the British.
The first level of the British one.
That is a really tough level.
Yeah, where you have to, like, secure a bridge in your squad, and you have these, like, waves of enemies that are coming at you that who have tanks, where you have to pick up a rocket launcher to destroy the tanks before they get too close and kill you, and there's, like, the all of these guys coming after you. You have to hold out for a set period of time, but it's unclear what the set period of time is, so you're, like, there's tension of, like, keep going and going and going. That was a good level. I enjoyed that. And then you had levels like the intro to the Russian campaign, where you're on a boat and you're crossing the River Volga, I believe it is.
Yep.
And you are getting yelled at, and you don't have a weapon, and there's people who are jumping off the side of the boat and getting shot by your commanding officer for not participating in this battle, and you're just supposed to run off and find a gun and keep fighting in Stalingrad, because Stalingrad was a crazy place.
Yeah, this is the enemy of the gates portion of the game. One of my favorite parts of that is you land on the beach, and it's kind of like this Russian version of Omaha Beach, and you've seen your commanding officers kill, like, deserters, and you team up with this sniper dude, and you're running, and he's like, we gotta backtrack a little bit, and there's, like, a commissar Russian officer there, and he's like, I got him, don't worry about it, and he just domes him, no questions asked, and then he's like, all right, go, let's go that way now, and I just loved that part.
I found this game, I got stuck on a lot of geometry. Did you guys find that?
Yep. Always getting caught on stuff.
Yeah.
Like
if you're trying
tables
to
tables and shit?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like corners, walls, doors, and corners and stuff.
I didn't
notice that as much, but I believe
it wasn't like a game breaking, like, oh, this is so bad, I can't even play anymore. But sometimes you'd be like trying to weave your way through and I'd get stuck.
I don't know how this compares to the PS2 version. I found to be extremely dark in areas, like, to the point where it was, like, kind of difficult to see. Like, did you guys have that?
No, you can change the lighting, and I think, of the PC version.
This game wasn't that dark, I don't think.
No, it's a flaw of the PS2 one.
Yeah.
It's extremely dark.
I hate dark games, so yeah. I would definitely notice that.
Yeah.
I think the battleship level was pretty dark. I don't know if that's in the PS2 version.
That level was also pretty bullshit from, like, a difficulty perspective. Because when you're, like, in the staircases and stuff, that was fine.
Again, you're alone.
Yeah. Yes, again, yeah, you're right. But there were situations where there were snipers that, like, the game almost expects you to die from them to know that they're there,
right,
to then do it again.
Even on the normal difficulty that I was playing, it was the same way.
Because there's, like, four levels on that battleship. With guys,
there's
just
so,
like,
much verticality.
Exactly, yeah.
Also, one of the biggest pet peeves in games is that when you have to follow a person and you don't walk the same speed as the person.
Yes.
You have to run ahead of them, basically.
Yeah. And then they get stuck behind you. And
you're talking about on that battleship? Yeah. I just ran ahead of them and it worked.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to, like, wait downstairs and he's, like, dressed up like the German officer and he salutes. And you're like, I've been standing here for
five minutes. Isn't that Captain Price?
Yeah.
So Captain Price, it's apparent. You rescue Captain Price from the last level of the American campaign?
Yeah, second to last level, right. Something like that.
And first off, that blew me away. I didn't realize that the same guy with the same mustache has been in all these Call of Duty games.
Yep.
I thought he was some, like, time-traveling, like,
he kinda
warrior.
He kind of is. He's like the Captain Price. He's like Link. He's like, there's a Captain Price for every age.
I saw, like, a GameFAQ article or something where it's, like, supposed to be the grandpa of the Modern Warfare.
That's funny.
And apparently he's in other, like, there's a Captain Price in, like, every game.
Yeah. They came up with a good character mod, and they were like, we're using this.
The British guy with the handlebar, mutton chops.
Mm-hmm. One thing I read about this game was that they originally envisioned it, because they had, these two guys had worked on Medal of Honor Allied Assault. They wanted to do something that was definitely not that game. So I guess originally they conceived of it as, like, you're James Bond in World War II. And I think that's why there are a handful of levels that are, like, you're this badass solo secret agent type guy.
Definitely feels GoldenEye.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they're the worst levels.
Yeah,
personally.
I agree.
Yeah, and then, like, that damn level is just too long.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the whole British campaign is
the weakest
part of the game.
They went back and they filled it in, and they were like, actually, we want to do these big set piece battles, and we'll just draw from Band of Brothers and Enemy at the Gates. But, like, they put them in and they're like, okay, well, now we got to add all these AI elements. Yeah. And, like,
those levels are, like, straight up copies of GoldenEye. Because there's the dam level, there's the ship level.
Frigate or whatever.
I found a lot of the levels, especially the American campaign, some of the American campaign. The mansion level's pretty good, but some of them are, like, just uninspired to me. They just feel like, you have a random house here, an open field, you have a house.
It's the Band of Brothers effect. Right. They want you to feel that.
But, like, I think these, like, I appreciated them more because you had a friendly squad And I think my favorite part of the game really is the American campaign, because it feels like a real battle situation where there's a lot of guys on both sides.
Yeah. And because it's set in the beginning of the game and it's the paratrooper operation before D-Day, like you land alone, it's night, you're behind enemy lines, you have to like gather some gear together. Like there's some tension to that because you just started playing the game. You don't know what to do yet necessarily.
Yeah, but once you get your squad and you find a squad, I feel like there's no tension in the game. As even the British portion, because you feel like Superman, until you get to the Russian portion where it's like, shit, I don't have a gun. Russian and there's portion, dive bombing Stukas.
It's the
and
best part.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I don't know. I didn't feel like I was actually in a war until Stalingrad. Like, I didn't feel like the war.
But there's
tension.
Even, I mean, there's even the middle.
It felt more
portion.
Like a PvP.
I mean, the Stalingrad level's awesome.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The what is it, Pavlov's house at the end, where you have to defend, I think it's like the last, oh, or it's like yeah, a couple Pavlov's levels from half. The end.
Yeah, that's one of the most challenging.
Where you're just in a house and you have to hold it.
Yep, there's tanks coming.
8 minutes or whatever it
there's,
is.
There's four floors. You have to go back and forth. You have to get
anti-tank
that
rifles.
Was a very good multiplayer level at that time.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It was super good.
I remember playing that one. Yeah, that was a really good one.
One was really tough.
That was a tough level because you're defending, too, and there's guys running up the stairs, and there's always, like, an area behind you when you have the anti-tank guns that guys can pop up. So, like, as soon as you blow up a tank, you have to turn right around and, like, get into cover.
That, I really felt like I was in a squad with guys who were helping me because they were, like, blocking off the entrance.
They're calling out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're coming up this
floor. That level was really good.
That's a great level.
Yeah. Yeah, those levels where you have tension and you're holding something for a set period of time were really good.
Mm-hmm. I looked at the Wikipedia page. I was really hoping that Pavlov's house was the same Pavlov as Pavlov's dog.
It's not.
But it's not.
Probably a lot of Pavlovs in the
former
Soviet Union.
I was holding out hope. The same name, I mean.
Could be.
I don't know when Pavlov's dog happened.
I think it was like turn of the century, but I could be wrong.
Turn of this century? Or
no, 19th century.
Yeah. Okay.
That shit's fucked up, too. You know, he like had a tube in the dog's mouth to measure the saliva that was produced?
No,
like
I did not
in the
know that.
In the glands, like inserted
to tell if he's
fucked up.
Yes. Progress demands sacrifices.
Oh God, Nazis! We're on the Nazis.
Whoa!
I thought we were talking about Russians here. Those are our allies. Thank you very much.
You mentioned that Vince Zampella is still relevant. He is still relevant. Jason West and Vince were fired from Infinity Ward in 2010.
Why? Is there a reason why? Like, that's public?
They were bought by Activision eventually.
But Activision published Call of Duty, right?
They didn't own the studio that made... They didn't own Infinity Ward at the time.
But were they the original publisher
for Call of Duty? Yes, they eventually would buy them. And then there was a disagreement, and they were fired from Infinity Ward in 2010. So 7 years after this game came out.
They were probably told that they had to make Call of Duty games forever, and they were like, nah, we don't want to do that.
Well, so...
We're going to do way cooler things.
They settled out of court because they sued them for hundreds of millions of dollars. And they took that money, and they made a company that you might know as Respawn.
Oh.
Who makes currently Apex Legends, Jedi Fallen Order, Titanfall was their big game.
Yep, that was their first game.
Titanfall and Titanfall 2.
Yep, which are excellent shooters.
All of those games are excellent.
Yeah, it's great. I kind of fell off Apex, but...
Yeah, but Titanfall 2 is like low-key
favorite games. Not for mechanical reasons, more of just it can't... Those kind of games can't hold my interest.
I played pretty regularly for 4 or 5 months, and now I'm done.
Call of Duty continues. It's made by a different development team now. Modern Warfare, the new Modern Warfare, was released a couple months ago in October of 2019. So they're keeping Modern Warfare, and Call of Duty currently has my most hated naming conventions in video games. So this is the reboot of Call of Duty Modern Warfare. There was a Modern Warfare 2. Was there a Modern Warfare 3?
Yep.
And now they're rebooting it just by calling it Modern Warfare.
The original was Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Oh, okay. So they also made Black Ops. They make Black Ops games.
Blops.
And last year they released Black Ops 4, but it wasn't Black Ops 4 with the Roman numerals IV. Black Ops II. So dumb.
I did get that game. I played it a month, maybe. Felt pretty burned by it.
Really? Did you not like the Battle Royale? I thought the Battle Royale
The Battle Royale was good, but I was playing it, and then Apex Legends, I think, came out, and I was kind of like, all right, well, this is a way better
Respawn.
Version. Yeah.
I played Black Ops 3 for, like, a second, and I was like, meh, this is okay, but I didn't like the, like, futuristic, spec-op-y feel of it.
I was playing on PC. I think if I were to get back into Call of Duty again, I might play it on, like, a PS4 or something. It just seems to me... It's more suited for a controller.
I am intrigued by the reboot of Modern Warfare because the original Modern Warfare is damn good. Yeah. It's a Call of Duty game, but
I will say
it's
these,
good.
These
on
things,
principle, I just
like,
can't.
That's fair. I get that.
I don't like it, and it makes me feel weird when I see stuff. I know you guys are going to be like, this guy. I watched...
Where are you going with this?
There's a lot of weird things coming out of this podcast.
So I watched the intro, the first level of this game, which starts... as a series of suicide bombers invade Piccadilly Circus and blow themselves up and civilians. And I felt really weird watching this as a video game in 2019.
Oh, I've played so many first-person shooter games in my life that I'm just dead inside.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
none of this affects me.
Have you watched, like, No Russian recently?
Do you know that level?
Yeah, I do. But there's also a level in Modern Warfare, the new one that came out, that is based on Benghazi. There's a level that's based on the Highway of Death in Iraq, which I don't know if you know about that.
No.
Do you guys know what the Highway of Death is?
It's where the U.S. Yes. like bombed,
so when,
retreating.
Yeah, Iraqis from the Gulf War. There's like a highway that's just filled with rusted out like tanks and cars. And
it was the retreating civilians. Iraqi army, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't just the Iraqi army. Right, it was a lot of refugees too that the U.S. bombed. There's also like the fact that they are clearly basing certain levels off of real world things that happen. And especially the whole game is basically the Syrian conflict, from what I heard, and they call the country Urzikistan. Instead of calling it Syria.
I do feel that pain,
like,
though.
What the fuck is going on with these people? Tom, like, they're making money off of things where people are, like, in the real world dying.
This is a criticism of the Tom Clancy games too, like Ghost Recon, because there was that game like Wildlands that came out a couple years ago, and it's all about like this special forces team, and you go into like Bolivia or something,
right? It's definitely
and you're taking out drug cartels,
and they call it Bolivia, and the Bolivia government was Bolivious.
Well, I don't think they have a government anymore right now, as of today.
Yeah,
so
thanks USA.
Well, I don't think it was us, but you know, I understand that, and I think that's kind of why World War II games are so popular, or at least were popular at the time. It's very
it's old enough.
It's old enough. You're
it's old
far
enough.
Enough removed.
Back
you know who the good guys
two
are.
Generations,
you know who
basically.
The bad guys are.
Back in the day, you couldn't make a Vietnam game because that was like, and when this game came out in like 2003, it was like taboo to make a Vietnam game.
Wasn't
and
I remember Battlefield Vietnam already out at that point?
That was like 2005 or six or
yeah.
that, I think.
But
like,
I mean, it was like
later.
Yeah, it was like
that
really
game was tight.
I remember wanting to play a Vietnam game.
Because that was too
watched
close.
Platoon.
Yeah.
And now we're doing stuff that's like based upon shit that happened yesterday.
Right. Well, which is odd because like the NES had Vietnam games. Like we had
Platoon.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, but that wasn't like real, like you are looking at
Akari
a guy.
Warriors and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
but that was, again, it's not like it's like a modeled head of like some.
Yeah, well,
dude.
Yeah, because.
The realism matters for sure.
It does, but that's kind of where I was ultimately getting to. Is like we've been doing this forever.
Right.
Like making games about terrible conflicts in our history, but now like now we're starting to enter.
You're
like,
looking down sights, hiding behind a car in Piccadilly Circus that's modeled on Piccadilly Circus with guys who are motion captured with CG with faces.
People have faces. Like, you can go up to them. It's like it's so fucked up.
I will say
so
though,
fucked.
Like
it's fucked.
The Russian level in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, like that is. I mean, this is a really controversial level, but I remember playing it at the time and being like, "This is really ballsy that they did this," and like. There was some narrative like stances you could take where you're like, okay, like I see what they're trying to do here. They're trying to set up a villain. They're trying to put you in the perspective of a guy that he ultimately betrays too in that level. Like you're left to die or something like that.
Yeah.
I think you become a different character or like that character.
I don't remember.
I don't remember exactly. Yeah. But I remember just thinking
that's the idea. You're framing. You're Russian and you're framing someone else, right? That's why he says no Russian.
Yeah, exactly. So you're speaking like Ukrainian or something like that. But I think that character he pushes you like out of a car and then like you become a playable shooter.
Yeah. Well, he kills you at the end. I think of that.
He shoots you. I think you come back to life maybe and play as like another character because you know in all these games you switch perspectives.
Right.
So my head is spinning.
Anyway, sorry, I'm talking about a different game now.
But like that is like that's like an original story.
Right.
You know, whereas I look at this game, like it was kind of weird because like it did kind of feel like a little uncomfortable, like replaying like Finest Hour, like knowing that you guys are going to be talking about this, going like. It's like, we are kind of like
exploiting.
It's exploiting. It's explaining one of the worst tragedies in human history.
Guys, my grandfather was at D-Day.
But their generation exploited World War II as well. Like, if you watch those old movies from the 50s,
But it wasn't, have you ever seen?
Like, those were the most popular movies of the day.
What's the movie with Sean Connery that's about D-Day? Like,
that's what I'm thinking of, like The Longest Hour.
Yeah, The Longest Hour.
That's exactly the movie I was just thinking about.
That's like so cartoony compared to what happened.
Well, that's how all movies were back then.
I mean, I guess...
That movie's great, by the way. I love that movie, right?
So, but World War II movies were instantly popular because people came back from the war. They were like, you're the heroes. We want to tell stories.
I feel zero hesitation about playing World War II game.
See, I think I don't feel hesitation either, but I do feel... I felt a little uncomfortable being like, I'm exploiting the fact that... You know, how many millions of people died in this conflict?
And if you want to bring like weird geopolitics into it too, like look who our allies are now, the Germans, look who we're not so friendly with, the Russians, like there are real world consequences that carry out from World War II as well.
And it's also like you're playing as, well, I mean, again, I think it's a very complicated issue, right? But you're playing as a Russian soldier who's not necessarily representative of the Russian government, right? You know, that's a different issue. I think this...
But I think that isn't that kind of what they're trying to portray in the Russian...
Yeah, and that's how I took it to.
That you're kind of just pushed along. And,
this, I still felt, was exploitative, but also in a way, it feels a little bit more innocent in the sense that, like, in a way, I almost kind of felt like I was playing a interactive History Channel documentary because it's like in between the levels.
It's also propagandizing the U.S. perspective of the war.
Well, yeah, that's what I was ultimately getting to. It's like it's like that we were always in the noble
right.
folks, right. Yeah.
And the Russians were the people that would shoot their own people.
Yeah,
so. I don't know. I liked to do that though. I liked. I mean, you're still killing Nazis, right? It's, you know.
Can't argue with that.
Can't argue.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's okay.
Like, yeah, World War II is what it is like that one war where you can say, like...
There's black and white.
There was clear-cut good guys for the most part and clear-cut bad guys for the most part. Maybe there's a country somewhere in there that's a little on the gray side that may have switched sides at some point
during
the war.
That's why Star Wars works, too. It's like, all right, well, now we have space Nazis and space empire and space fascists.
So I looked it up while we were sitting here, while we were having this like exploitive conversation, and it was like in 1999. Remember the Army Men games, the plastic Army Men games?
Oh, yeah.
The PlayStation 1. I don't know if you guys remember this because I remember it was like when I was younger.
It was like was that the strategy game?
No,
it was a third person shooter.
Yeah, and I remember. Opens with like a D-Day level. And it's like you're literally a bunch of green army men storming like a small beach, getting like blown to bits
by the gray army men, right?
Yeah. And I go, that's a lot more. I mean, neither one is good. I'm going on record and saying neither one is good that like we're making video games, but awful event in history. But like plastic army men storming D-Day is like extremely exploitive to me. That's just like we're totally making light of like one of the most important events in our.
I don't know, man. I love World War II
games. It's kind of been mythologized, though. That's the point.
Right. Like, I think World War II games are so sick.
We haven't even mentioned the ping of an M1 Garand yet.
Yes.
You know? The one thing that this game did different was they like recorded all of the weapons like to be historically accurate, and they all have the noises for each game for each of the weapons.
Yeah.
We didn't mention the multiplayer, which was a big deal in 2003.
The multiplayer. Well. A big deal how?
I mean, it was a World War II shooter that had good multiplayer in 2003.
I mean, I remember playing Allied Assault multiplayer. I mean, you know, I think being a game that was made from the Quake 3 engine lended itself well to functioning at that time for online multiplayer. It was very smooth. A lot of people played it.
I tried to play it on Steam servers, and I could. Oh, like, it was like laggy as hell. Hmm.
I wonder if that was a GameSpy game originally, and then they like some did something with the servers.
Yeah, GameSpy was weird.
I remember at the time playing a lot of Call of Duty and Call of Duty 2 multiplayer, and they were great.
I played a lot of Allied Assault, Call of Duty, and then there was an expansion to Allied Assault 2 where you got like Battle of the Bulge and everything. All those games have blended together in my head. Yeah, so I was playing Call of Duty being like, is this happening now? Well, oh, no, that's Allied Assault.
It's funny because they're all made by the same people, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I can't fully remember what I want to believe that Allied Assault had an old like, you know, Quake or Doom style thing where you could hold a bunch of guns. I remember Call of Duty being a little different in that you could only hold two guns at a time.
Well, you can hold two main guns. Then like
two main guns, right, and a pistol and grenades.
Yeah.
But I played Allied Assault, and I remember nothing of it. I remember I owned it back in the day, and I remember you started off in, like, Northern Africa.
It's not D-Day is not the first level.
No, you do start in North Africa, because I played it when I downloaded the Origin Access like pass a couple of years ago. It was like, when I was like, oh, this is on here.
Yeah.
I started it, and I played through the whole Africa part.
Yeah.
And then you go to like Norway or something like that for a level.
Really? I could have... I think I was under the belief that...
No,
it's like the third level. Pretty sure
Beach was the first level.
Yeah, because like I had that game, yeah. So...
It's Call of Duty.
Call of Duty. So, a couple things. IGN rated this game 9.3 out of 10 when it came out. It was the 8th best-selling game of best-selling computer game of 2003. What were ahead of it? What was ahead of it? The Sims Superstar expansion?
That was Sims territory back then.
The Sims, Command & Conquer Generals, which is a great game. Mm-hmm. Warcraft 3, The Frozen Throne. The Sims Make & Magic expansion. The Sims Unleashed expansion. And SimCity 4. We're all ahead of it.
SimCity 4 was real good.
So just so we're clear here, did EA just straight up own the PC market at the time? Because The Sims were EA, The SimCity was EA, and CNC was EA at the time. CNC Generals.
Seems that they did this.
It was pre Steam. It was pre Steam. So Valve wasn't. I mean,
they're just making
the most successful stuff Valve had was mods from Half-Life.
Right. Half-Life 2 came out in 2004.
Right, yeah.
So it was
that was the beginning of Steam.
Right. Also, this game spawned 25 sequels.
Damn.
Take that, Mario.
that includes mobile games, but 19 console and PC games, which is just crazy in general. So 2003, there is more... 2019 minus 2003 is...
16 years.
16 years and 19 games.
Jeez. Yeah, that's a lot.
So this game has a pretty tremendous just legacy in its own for creating the series. But yeah.
I think all of them use, even today, bits and pieces of the Quake 3 engine. Like, you can find parts
yes.
of code that are...
People make fun of that.
Right.
Like that it's, there's code of the Quake 3 engine in the game. But where does this game go on our endless list of games, which you can find in the podcast description, as well as up on our Medium page? Currently, the rankings go from number 1, Super Mario 64, all the way down to number 56, Jurassic Park Trespasser. There are 56 games on our list. We add a new game each week. This is not the first FPS game we've played. We've played GoldenEye 007. We've also played Jurassic Park Trespasser, I think, and Hexen Beyond Heretic, if you want to count that as a first-person shooter, which it probably is. Those are the three FPS games we've played.
GoldenEye to Trespasser.
This is probably below GoldenEye. Maybe it's above Hexen.
This feels like a middle of the game or middle of the list game to me.
Yes. Where do you guys want to start on our list?
Where's Hexen? So Hexen's at 36. I think it's better than Hexen.
Yeah, I think it's better than Hexen as well.
Did you play Hexen?
No.
Just out of curiosity.
But I listened to the pod and I did research it online.
I think this game is better than Hexen.
Play Hexen?
I love Hexen.
I know.
Did you hear? I love
Hexen. I've heard.
Yeah, that is a podcast favorite for Matt.
Yeah. True. It's better than Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
which is 34.
I think it's better than Crazy. I think it's better than Spider-Man. It's definitely better than Spider-Man.
It's better than Luigi's Mansion.
It holds up better.
So Luigi's Mansion's 30.
Well, I would slow my roll on Luigi's Mansion. Is I would say...
I'm not trying to run ahead of Luigi's Mansion too far. Don't worry.
I think that...
I heard that Luigi's Mansion climb in that episode. I think you're setting up for another one here.
I'm playing Luigi's Mansion 3 right now, too, right? You know, I'm all in on Luigi.
Somebody said it's great is that Luigi's Mansion really is a really well done 7 out of 10 game.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
They're always going to be 7 out of 10.
Kind of like Control.
Yeah. I would say that Luigi's Mansion is like a really well-crafted experience, but I think Call of Duty 2003 holds up better. I also think it's more influential.
Yeah, having played...
It's funner to play
having than played
Luigi's Mansion.
First-person shooter games like up until the current day, like this didn't feel like a really outdated first-person shooter. Like it felt smooth. Like obviously it's from 2003, but like it's pretty fast. Like it was easy to switch between guns. Like the enemies were smart enough and powerful enough. Like it was good.
Yeah, I just think that the design of the environment with the spaces that weren't detailed and did not have a lot inside of them kind of makes me not kind of makes it dated. Because there wasn't like tables and like
it's aesthetically dated.
You're talking about the environment. Yeah.
The mechanics though felt I didn't feel I was plopped like completely out of time. Like when I was trying to replay the PS2.
You don't have to press the up and down on the yellow buttons on the N64 to move your
I mean it's
scroll your aim.
I think the gameplay is super snappy. I think
even things the
gunplay
like,
is good.
Gunplay is good. Even things like you can't really run, like you can't hit like shift to run or anything that. But if you hit from a standing position, if you hit crouch, you will like dive. Or like, if you go prone, you will like dive, and like the camera moves around a little bit. It's like, oh, there's physicality to my character. Interesting.
Well, and the leans. I mean, again, I think I love leaning and a game that is built to include leaning in first person shooters.
So I would put this above Luigi's Mansion. I would put it above Ninja Gaiden as well, just because as we said in the last episode, the bullshit parts in that game make it tough to recommend. Do we put it above River City Ransom?
I think it keeps going. I think personally, I would put this game above. I was going to say God of War.
Is there a new wall at God of War?
I was wondering about God of War.
I did not enjoy the story of the overall story of Call of Duty.
It's kind of cut and pasted together.
Yeah, right?
And it's almost like...
It's just like you've seen World War II movies, right?
Yeah, it's...
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
And there's a tremendously cool set pieces, but as a whole, it's not... Like, God of War is a very tight experience.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of bothered me about it, even though not that much, but like you get to the end of the Russian campaign and you think you're going to Berlin... Then you have to go back and do an American campaign again, or level in.
Right,
in
they do one of each stone. Campaign.
Then you do a British campaign, and you're like blowing up the V2 rockets. Then you get to Berlin, and that's a very perfunctory level.
I thought those levels were bad.
Yeah.
That V2 level sucks because you have to go into the bunker, and the bunker is terrible.
It was so hard. I was like driving myself crazy last night trying to go through that.
That was terrible. I hated that part.
I think this game, we kind of touched on the AI being a little too like cheaply good at times, where they could just hit you and kill you out of nowhere before you even see them.
In that section, there was a part where I would run up to a mounted machine gun in a bunker, and like every third time I did it, I would just get headshotted immediately. And I was like, how? I'm in a bunker.
Well,
I don't understand.
You said every third time. And so I think that there's a certain inconsistency to this game where, you know, it's, for example,
it's AI. It's not
the
scripted.
AI. Well, but like the AI of your squad mates is, I thought, good or impressive. Like they would do cool animations. You would see them flanking, and maybe that was because you were
Jason
on their
Statham
side.
In that level does not help. That V2 level
does not help at all.
But like,
he's terrible.
The AI of the enemies was not impressive. They would like keep their heads up. You know, there was no.
They ran out when you're in a bunker.
It didn't
you
look
think
organic
they would,
like right. your allied AI yeah, looked.
Right. That's fair.
They'd run out at you.
And in addition to that, like, the game bends the rules a lot, where you'll like not be allowed to kill someone yet. Or it seems like the AI was very dynamic in its lethality. Like, there were times where they wanted you to survive, and so the AI would just be real shit at aiming.
This might be the case for your difficulty, but I didn't feel that at my difficulty, which was the normal difficulty.
Like, for instance, the car mission when you're escaping from whatever you're escaping from.
The American campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you're in the back of this car, and they will just keep shooting at you while you, like, pick up the Panzerfaust and, like, aim it much, and it, there was just an inconsistency to, like, they should have killed me 10 times over in the amount of time I'm just standing up on this truck.
Right, but because they're on the truck and you're in the car chase level, they're right. Not as good.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And that, fine. I really don't like that in games, when you can't tell, like, you the illusion is broken that the game wants them to just shoot at you to create spectacle and noise. Yeah,
I felt that
too. And they're not actually shooting at you. It's impossible for you to die.
There were certain parts of certain levels where I would just breeze through. And then
you could just stand there and they'll miss you.
Yeah, no one would hit you. And you'd be like, oh, okay, cool. So, like, I can play the game at this kind of pace and with this level of strategy. Right. And then you get to a part and you're like, oh, I can't get through this.
Like, you can't even stand up. Yeah. Or they'll just, five different guys will kill you.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this game doesn't go above God 4.
I don't know about that.
I think God of War is, like, mechanically pretty great.
I think it is as well. I think I enjoy the gameplay a little bit better than that. And I think the puzzles are interesting. And the story, the overall story is tight.
So we think that also DuckTales is better than this game?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I have not played DuckTales.
DuckTales is...
Love the TV show. I was just singing its praises on Disney Plus earlier.
It's like a top-tier NES platformer.
I was very surprised at how much I liked DuckTales.
Fair. Right, fair.
So I can't speak to the PC version, so I'm not going to really get into, like, where I'd rank it, but I guess a question I have, and if I was ranking the PS2 Finest Hour game right now, I would go, okay, there was all these, like, really cool, big thematic levels, which sounds like, which is also in the PC game.
Cool, but
also
set pieces.
But then there's also, like, the PS2 version, I think, is, or the PS2 Finest Hour game is rife with, like, pacing issues, because then you, how you guys are kind of referred to them as, like, the commando levels, where I feel like that drastically slows down the game. And I remember, if that is similar to the PC version, I would go, it breaks up the game so much and that I go, oh, it's like a slog.
It's in contrast to what they're trying to convey to in the initial American levels, where you are with a bunch of dudes.
Right. You could become your squad mate. And then, like, the British campaign even starts off with you holding a bridge with a bunch of squad mates, which is great. And then it immediately is like, we're going to drop you behind the enemy lines and you have to go do by yourself, take out these searchlights, and then take out all this other stuff and this artillery that's going to shoot this. So by yourself, you become a superhero. And it kind of, to me, that, like, threw off the game a ton. It, like, threw off what they were trying to do with the game.
Yeah. I think it's because it goes back to that idea that they tried to make a Secret Agent game initially.
Right.
And then the studio was like, no, we want big set pieces instead. Yeah. Like, weave those in. And they're like, well, we made these levels already.
It
might have
benefited if they found a way to make more, like, stealth mechanics for those kind of levels, where you are an actual agent or behind enemy lines.
But because you're behind enemy lines on a bridge in Germany, you can't be like, the Americans are there. It's like, well, no, they're not. They're in France.
So I guess I think of it when comparing this to Onimusha and God of War, is where we're at right now on this list. Like, if, I mean, it's been a long time since I played God of War, but, like, if it was, like, 3 years from now, we're suddenly replaying all three of these games for this podcast for some reason. Like, God of War and Onimusha, look at and go, like, I was like, oh, yeah, like, those are going to be, like, a breeze to play through. Like, that'll be fun.
Rather replay both of those games.
I would rather replay both of those games.
And
as
I would
well.
Look at, like, the Call of Duty one going, like, oh, it's going to be hard. Actually, it's going to be a slog.
No,
it's
going to be a slog. Personally, I would rather not replay Onimusha. I would rather play God of War or Call of Duty than.
Well, then that kind of brings us to, so we've identified God of War, but what about Onimusha? Is it between them? Is it behind Onimusha?
Well, I turn to you guys because I didn't play this PC version.
I'm up in the air on it. I think that I could go either way on it, to be honest.
Does Onimusha, in my mind, doesn't commit any sins that we've kind of talked about?
Even
is that
tank controls?
I mean, that's not a negative to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I also didn't think that was a negative.
And that's a mechanic of its time. And like, it would be different if a game came out now and forced you to use tank controls. Like, I think that would be a different argument.
I think it's impressive that Onimusha came out in 2001. This game came out in 2003. And Onimusha succinctly tells a story in a way that Call of Duty just all of Call of Duty games don't do.
Yeah, there's, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's no story to this.
I was going
to
say, there's a double-edged sword of legacy with this game where it's like, yeah, there's a huge impact from Call of Duty, but also it's not always good.
Yeah, and I would say there's better Call of Duty games that are going to go higher on this list.
Modern Warfare would go higher on this list. Yeah.
Even Call of Duty 2, I think, refined a lot of...
Yeah, I think we're looking at like the beginnings of a really good franchise.
So... I'm going to propose, and you guys can strike me down with all of your might if you want, but is this our new number 28, which is above River City Ransom but below Onimusha Warlords?
Yeah, I would vote for that.
I'm okay with that.
I'm cool.
Okay. I think we have our new number 28, Call of Duty 2003, the start of the franchise. Goes now as our number 28.
Is that the first time with the back-to-back episodes resulting in back-to-back rankings?
I feel like it happens a lot more than it should.
Well, outside of maybe the first two episodes.
We're in similar headspaces when we're picking these games. I'm feeling a late 20s, early 30s.
We do that a lot, and I think that's just a function of the games that we choose. I think right now we're in this mode where we're like, we have this like middle, and we want to fill it up with stuff.
Right,
So. My thinking in requesting this game was like, we haven't done a ton of first-person shooters. We're not about to do Halo. What's kind of like a foundational one that's a middle of the road game?
Yeah.
That's what we got.
That's what we got. So our new number 28 on the endless list is Call of Duty 2003, the first game in the series.
Officially not as good as DuckTales.
Officially, I don't think it's as good as DuckTales. But you can find...
You just slap you in the back?
Yeah. You can find our complete...
I'm going to punch you in the face.
You can find our complete endless list in the podcast description. It's up on our Medium page. We just added our 57th game. Is that right? Yes, 57th game in Call of Duty. And thank you, Chris, Matt, Steve, for joining us. You can email us with any of your questions, comments, or concerns at itssobadpod@gmail.com, at itssobadpod on Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another episode, and that episode will be another doozy. I don't think it will get as high or another back-to-back, but it's Thrasher Skate and Destroy for the PlayStation 1.
Oh, just you wait.
Thanks, guys.